Benjamin, growing up queer in Australia, it's really growing up queer in Queensland too, which was an added disadvantage, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think Australia is such a big country and there are many Australias across this continent. And certainly when it comes to gay rights and more broad queer rights, states have had their own distinct histories. And Queensland being the last mainland state to decriminalise homosexuality means that, you know, we got to the 1990s, other states had had like at least a decade of more basic freedoms and rights. And even though we had it decriminalised, there are a lot of leftovers. I mean, those arguably Joe Bjorke-Peterson era mentality leftovers of what gay meant. And so even throughout my high school years in the 90s, huge stigma around homosexuality and queerdom generally.
And then, of course, there was the issue of being Asian, because that's got its own particular sort of prejudices and beliefs about homosexuality as well, hasn't it?
Yes, I'm a babushka doll of minorities, minority within a minority within a delicious minority. And you are right. In Asian households more broadly, whether you're East Asian or Central Asian or South Asian, there is kind of a bigger focus on the family, and that can kind of manifest as a pressure to marry those... You know, those that talk of grandchildren, which I don't think, you know, is exclusive to any culture, but can be kind of amplified in Asian cultures. Luckily for me, though, I have to say, because my mum and my dad were quite liberal, especially my mum, in their own ways, there was less of that kind of pressure. And even now, you know, we don't have any, they don't have any biological grandkids. They have step grandkids and they don't really mind. So compared to my cousins, compared to my aunties and uncles, I was pretty lucky.
After you've written this book, have you found that it's helped other young men, particularly young Asian men who are trying to find their own place in the society too?
Well, I hope so. So as we're talking now, Growing Up Queer has only just come out. I think technically it's not even out, even though you can buy it from bookshops. But what I have kept in mind when editing this anthology was to ensure that it was deeply inclusive, because, you know, I've certainly read gay volumes or queer volumes where it's very much about the cisgender, gay, white experience, essentially. Not that they would think of themselves that way. And I think I was very, very adamant coming into choosing these stories that they would cross generations, that we would have extremely young people and people who lived in periods where homosexuality was not just illegal, but inconceivable almost. So seeing those generational breakdowns, we've got, you know, David Marr in the anthology, and we've got people who are riding on the cusp of, you know, between their teens and 20s, essentially. Wanted to capture those experiences, wanted to capture people who come from a disability background as well and how that intersects with their queer identity. And also when you think of our, you know, hilariously and beautifully unwieldy acronym nowadays, LGBTIQA+. But, you know, that acronym exists because we are myriad identities and communities there. And the, say, the gay male experience is definitely not the same as the trans female experience. And not only are we trying to educate and inform a cisgender heterosexual audience, but we're also trying to educate ourselves within our own communities too. So yeah, I do hope that younger people, but people of any age and any sexuality or gender expression, find themselves in this book. If they're not queer, I think they'll be able to relate to those feelings of being an outsider, for instance.
And finally, I have to ask, because you're well known for writing very funny columns and also very funny TV scripts, did a sense of humour help you get through all this?
I think a sense of humour is survival. There is the cliche of the hilarious queer person, you know, everyone from Hannah Gadsby to Reese Nicholson and beyond. You know, we've got a lot of funny people that come out of our communities. And I'm not necessarily sure that that's an accident. To be able to survive what can be pretty harsh terrain, pretty harsh bigotry. You've got to build a defense mechanism, and humor is essential to all of that. What are those sayings to do with comedy writing? It's, you know, time plus tragedy equals comedy. And I think that's also a saying essentially about resilience too. There's the other saying, I think, by Mel Brooks, which is tragedy is when I cut my finger, comedy is when you fall into an open sewer and die. And that's all about perspective, really. And I think queer communities and everything that we've survived individually and as a community, you know, that resilience is often expressed in humour, whether it's in our writing, whether it's in our festivals, whether it's in our families too.